The Bentley is joining the Ferrari, Jaguar, and Benzes. The Garretts had passed through the high walls and pulled onto their property. They parked in the 5-car garage and entered the house through the heavy wooden door that led from the garage into a mudroom and from there into the well-appointed gourmet kitchen, where we waited. Chapter 5. Mr. Garrett walked in carrying a dozen shopping bags. He had on top-shelf golf attire and a Boston Red Sox baseball cap. Looked like they had played 9 holes, then gone on a Rodeo Drive shopping spree. Each bag probably had at least 2 grand worth of goods. His wife entered, snapping.
"Then tell me why 2 are missing."
He barked.
"How would I know?"
"Why would you even need them if you don't use them?"
"For the last time, woman, they aren't mine."
"Who opened the box, Dickie Bird, if not you?"
"Don't raise your voice at me, Elaine. Woman, don't ever raise your voice at me." She could stunt double for Jennifer Lawrence. Mr. Garrett was a fat Ben Affleck. He weighed at least 350. Pictures around the house showed him thinner, stronger, younger. She persisted.
"Did the box open itself and 2 just get up and walk away, or were they stolen? You should know what's in your Ferrari. It's your goddamn favorite car."
"I will check with the Koreans who detail my cars."
"Yeah, let's blame the Asians.
They are the ones responsible."
"You have a quick answer for everything. Everything is always someone else's fault. Nothing is ever your fault. Nothing. Not even this. No matter what, you have the perfect
woman. What did I..."
They stopped their heated conversation when she shrieked and dropped her bags. We were right there, not hidden, but they had been too busy arguing to notice us across the room. The man of the hour jumped when he saw me setting the formal table. He reached to his empty waistband in a way that told me if he had a gun, he would have come in shooting, killed us both, earned a key to the city, then went out to dinner for steak and lobster. But I gave him a peek at the .38 I carried under my coat. He tightened his jaw, squared up, then spread his fingers to show he was unarmed. Trouble wasn't new to him. The man born and raised in Boston, son of a bank robber who ran his business in Arkansas, Tennessee, Texas, and Alabama in the 60s and 70s. Bad news and trouble were in Mr. Garrett's blood. Tense, knowing how bad this could get, I said, "Welcome home." Mrs. Garrett scurried behind Mr. Garrett, and even though she didn't say a word, it was in her frantic body language. "Let Fatso die first. I'm the graceful blonde European woman of good stock. I'm supposed to live to see the credits roll at the end of any horror film." She stepped on dropped bags, trembled.
"Sweet baby Jesus, we're being robbed."
Mr. Garrett snapped.
"Who the fuck are you niggas?"
His powerful Boston accent carried across 12,000 square feet like an overseer's alarm. Jake Ellis tilted his head sideways.
"Did he call us niggas? Fucking moolies. Why are you niggas in my goddamn home?"
Jake Ellis frowned.
"Lower your voice and show some respect, Mio Sandwich. You don't give orders, nigga. Not in my house."
Garrett's wife pulled his shoulder.
"You called him the N-word, Dickie Bird, which is very offensive, unless it's in a song. But even then, well, people like us shouldn't sing it, not in public. But you called him that bad word, and he's unhappy about it. So he insulted you back, that's all."
I stepped toward Garrett. "San Bernardino paid us to stop by."
"You broke up my fucking house under the orders of San Bernardino?"
I nodded and pointed. "How this dinner goes is up to you, Mr. Garrett." Mr. Garrett looked to his left and saw what was on the floor. 10 feet of plastic had been laid out, along with tools from Home Depot that could build a house or cut a body to pieces.
"Nigga, is that supposed to scare me?"
Jake Ellis did African finger snaps.
"If you had sense, you'd be piecing your pants. If you had common sense, you wouldn't be in my house. You wouldn't even be in Pasadena. Back in the day, we had laws. We had ordinances to keep your kind out."
Garrett smiled as his eyes went from Jake Ellis to me.
"San Bernardino sent 2 nigger derricks to break in my home, to cross this line over this fucking financial disagreement?"
Confused, the terrified wife asked,
"Derricks? Their names aren't Derrick. Both of them?"
Jake Ellis said, "No, pretty woman. A derrick is someone sent to execute someone."
Nigga, don't talk to my wife.
Her voice shook.
Execute?
Jake Ellis said. Your husband is in big trouble. He might end up on the gallows.
Gallows? You mean like hanging? You're going to hang him? And me?
Jake Ellis snapped his fingers the African way. Your boo is in debt and refusing to pay. Mr. Garrett frowned at Jake Ellis, glared at him like he wanted to rip his head off, then again at me, shot me the same vile look. It had no impact. He'd end up dancing on air if he made one false move right now. Garrett glanced toward the living room, toward two spots where he had hidden guns. A man like him, even now, was contemplating his next move. I said, we put the Glocks in a safe place. Same for the rifle you had in the kitchen. Matter of fact, we moved all of your guns and automatic weapons. Same for the sharp knives.
Your niggas stole my guns?
We're not thieves. Jake Ellis added, I took out all the house phones, too. And your Wi-Fi is down. Mr. Garrett yielded a soulless smile. Danger lived behind his eyes. He inhaled, looked toward the kitchen, offended.
You niggas cooked my salmon?
Jake Ellis said, I sure in the fuck did.
Why?
Because I don't eat fried chicken.
Molly, that's Copper River King salmon. Cost $50 per pound.
The wife said.
But he paid a lot more than that because he had it flown in by private jet.
You had the nerve to break in my home and touch my things? You cooked my food?
Jake Ellis said. We can let the food finish cooking and eat. Or I can take you into the living room and have you stand on the plastic. I don't give a fuck which way this goes, honky. I said, enough. Let's sit. Be professional. I understand your point of view, Mr. Garrett. But you know San Bernardino, so let's try and put refresh on this before it goes off the rails. I pulled a chair back and politely asked Mr. Garrett to cop a squat. He took a breath, nodded at his wife as if to say everything would be all right, then put his butt in the chair. I reached into his pocket, and he snapped, Don't fucking touch me. I need your phone. He took his cell out, slammed it on the marble floor. Jake Ellis took the wife's cell, rested it on the counter. Mrs. Garrett was confused. I pulled out a chair for her. She sat, and then I scooted the chair up. Hands folded in her lap, pristine and proper, she looked at me. Programmed with good manners, she automatically said,
Thank you.
My southern programming kicked in, and I said, You're welcome. Garrett commanded, Don't talk to my wife. Not one word. Jake Ellis sat next to the woman, did that to piss Garrett off. You're pretty enough to be the queen of Belgium. You're Becky with the good hair.
Don't call me that. I hate when people call me that.
You're a model?
Thank you. Not a model.
Such pulchritude. She scrunched her face.
What does that mean?
Means you're beautiful.
That word sounds ugly. It sounds like a bad attitude.
You're rocking a cyberidic lifestyle.
You know a lot of $10 words, huh?
How old are you? About 19?
19? No way. Almost 34.
Mr. Garrett said,
Leave her out of this, and let's deal with the issue at hand.
Jake Ellis snapped.
Was I talking to you?
When me and my partner are ready to deal with the issue at hand, we will deal with said issue. You ain't running a damn thing up in here. Jake Ellis went back to Mrs. Garrett. He spoke to her in the kindest voice, gave her the Jake Ellis smile as he told her, Your man is filthy rich. He makes a lot of money. But a woman needs more than capital. I bet he doesn't give it to you like you want it. I bet you've been craving a man who can dip real deep and hit the bottom and all four sides at once. You like a good fucking. Mr. Garrett erupted.
Stop talking to my wife like that.
She shuddered, put her hand to her chest.
Oh, my sweet Jesus.
I bet you hate it because you want to get it the way a real man gives it, to a delicate thing like you. Even a little thing like you wants a rough rider, wants to feel like you are more woman than a big woman. I bet he goes limp and dies in the furrow. And I bet you my last dollar, you ain't had good lovin' since God knows when.
Mr. Garrett stood and exploded.
Nigga, one more word to my wife and...
Jake Ellis stood.
Who the hell are you talking to in that tone?
I know it ain't me.
Mr. Garrett's wife begged him to sit back down, grabbed his arm, pulled him. Only took a few hot words to set a man like Garrett off. Jake Ellis said,
Come this way and see how fast you fall down.
Mr. Garrett barked.
Tough talk doesn't scare me.
Mrs. Garrett shivered, made a mousy sound, didn't blink as she looked at her husband, checked to see if he would stand up like a warrior and be emperor of his stronghold. I stepped in, said, Mr. Garrett, have you heard of the boys of Bukum in Africa?
Bukum? Never heard of it.
It's a small slum village on the coast of Ghana.
He's an African, I know that. He reeks of Ebola, smells like poverty. Now my house smells like famine and disease.
Bukum has produced more champion boxers than anywhere else in the world, per capita, that is. That man you're disrespecting is a world-class pugilist. My friend trained without headgear, on concrete, not in a ring with a mat that forgives you if you get knocked down, or catches you and lets you bounce if you get knocked out. He trained on unforgiving concrete. He trained to never lose, to never be knocked down, because you fall there, you hit the concrete, and you get knocked out twice. He trained outside, in Ghana's heat. No ropes, so they learn not to back down. You're facing a warrior who has never gone down, not even on one knee, but he's put many out for the count. He doesn't know how to lose. He won't quit until you're expired or the earth has fallen into the sun.
Garrett pointed at Jake Ellis and ordered, African, leave my wife alone.
Garrett sat back down. When he was seated, Jake Ellis took his seat again. Jake Ellis winked, yielded a playboy grin.
I think this BYD likes me a little bit.
San Bernardino's issue is with me, not with her.
Jake Ellis didn't back off.
I'm being saluted by fat, hard nipples.
She lowered her head.
Cold, I'm just a little cold.
I bet your nipples are as pink as this salmon. Mr. Garrett opened and closed his hand.
Don't talk to her like that,
Jake Ellis said.
Look at me. Be the young thang. Give me your eyes for a moment.
She slowly, reluctantly raised her head, then gradually turned her eyes to Jake Ellis. He smiled at her. She shuddered, then exhaled and closed her eyes for a moment. He asked,
You love your husband like Bear loved Kunta Kinte? Or are you his kizi?
He thinks that money he has and that wedding ring make you property.
I think he cares about you the way slave master Tom cared about kizi. He'll turn on you one day. They always do.
I'm offended. You don't know anything about me or my husband.
Pretty woman. I know people. I can look in his eyes and see what kind of man he is. He's old, fat, rich, and white. White men have been horrible to white women all of your lives, and you have failed to recognize that. You know that? You were his chattel back in the day.
Chattel?
You were his chattel, and the black man was his slave.
I don't know what chattel means.
You were his property.
He owned you, and didn't allow you to own nothing, and you still don't get fair pay.
He's your enemy, not just mine and the Mexicans and the Muslims, if he's that kind of colonialist. You think you're special? Because you're a pretty white woman, but he's tricked you. White man wants you so he can have white babies, that's all.
We don't have children.
Well, still, I bet he doesn't respect you.
Please, stop talking to me.
He respects nobody but other white men. Your man is cut from the same cloth. You're a trophy that'll stop looking brand new after a while, if you haven't already lost your shine.
That's not nice.
You're a midnight chew toy in high heels and thong.
I know what I'm talking about. Man like these, once you reach a certain age, he'll leave you curbside and bring in a new model.
He wouldn't put me on the streets. Why would you say something as mean as that?
He would.
He can't. At least I don't think he can. I'd have to review our prenuptial agreement.
Jake Ellis laughed at her, shook his head.
A prenuptial?
Bet he got you good. She clenched her jaw.
Why is that funny?
Jake Ellis shrugged.
Real love doesn't need no prenup. You have a business arrangement.
The contract he made with you supersedes the arrangement you have with God. And white men don't believe in God. They claim they do. They wave Bibles, but their actions are more powerful than their hypocritical words. They believe in some image of a white supreme being. He is worried more about his assets than taking care of where your ass sits. You've been played. Her nostrils flared, and her lips wanted to move, but no words came out. Mr. Garrett said,
"Not a word, Elaine. Not one more word, woman."
She shifted, looking angry at Jake Ellis and resentful of her husband for silencing her. Garrett said, "I want both of you the fuck out of my home. This is not called for." I said, "In time, we eat and chat, and we decide how this goes."
"I'm not eating. This food could be poison for all I know."
Jake Ellis kept chatting with Mrs. Garrett. "I bet if you leave him before 10 years, or if that snowflake decides to file for a divorce behind your back, you don't get nothing but the clothes on your back and thong in your ass crack. And he can do like Tom Cruise did his Australian wife." She said,
"Nicole Kidman?"
"Yeah, her. She was blindsided."
"Is that what happened?"
"They were at the 10-year mark, and Tom Cruise dumped her."
"For no reason?"
"Pussy got old, man went cold."
"That's not nice."
"This fool would probably do the same. Dump you before 10 years hit, cut his losses, get a younger version of you, and jump up and down on that leather sofa in the living room while you're somewhere broke, crying your eyes out. You'll end up on a sofa, in therapy, all broken down." Mr. Garrett slapped his hands on the table. "Enough!" Jake Ellis grinned. "Your husband is a smart man. Plans ahead. He has his hands in the opioid trade, but no one can touch him. Same for fentanyl. It comes in from China with a layover in Mexico before hitting his people in the U.S. And he's never involved. But he runs it. Sells poison 50 times stronger than heroin. Drugs that no wall will stop. They come to points of entry and on planes, trains, and automobiles. You think you matter that much? You are here to make a criminal look respectable. You're chattel wearing diamonds. When he cuts you loose and time comes to divide the house, he'll throw you out on the streets and give you what's outside, while he keeps all of what's inside to himself. I bet that's how the contract reads, right?" "Stop talking to my wife." "You ain't the boss. Not while I'm here." Mrs. Garrett bounced her leg, terrified. Jake Ellis said, "Hey, PYT, look at me for a second." Mr. Garrett told her, "Don't look at him. Ignore him." Jake Ellis whispered, "It's okay. Look at me, PYT." Garrett's wife opened her eyes and regarded Jake Ellis again. She looked at Jake Ellis, and Garrett lost that struggle to control her. She had leaned away from Jake Ellis when she sat, as far as she could from both of us, the men who had broken into their home and commandeered their kitchen. Now, she leaned in his direction, the way you did a confidant. Jake Ellis said, "Sorry. I got upset, kind of went off the rails a bit. I scare you?"
"I'm okay."
"You're staring. Trying to memorize my face for the police or something?"
"Just never seen skin so smooth."
She shrugged.
"I bet you have a good dermatologist."
"Not used to a white woman looking at me like that. I'm used to y'all clutching your purse and dialing 911 just because I'm walking down the street minding my own business." She said,
"I've always thought black men were handsome. One of my good friends is black, and her brother was always trying to get me to let him take me out to the movies and stuff."
"You had some black man in your bedroom before?"
"No. Never dated anyone black. Or anyone at all. I was an ugly duckling."
"You don't have to date a black man or be pretty to have sex with a black man."
"I never slept with black guys."
"That's your rite of passage."
"Never did. My friends did when they were high or drunk for fun."
"Where are you from? Vermont? Idaho? Montana?"
"I'm from Compton. Grew up about 20 miles away from here."
"No. You're not from the 90220 where they have that sexy-ass mayor?"
"Asia Brown?
She's smart as hell and got sexy on lock."
"I was born there. Used to live there, just like Kevin Costner."
Garrett
grunted, shifted, incensed, his finger moving like he had an invisible gun in his hand, and each time he was shooting Jake Ellis, and sometimes he was shooting his wife. You're from Compton, and you never dated a black man?
I told you I didn't.
You have a nice body. Nice bottom. Sure you're not black and passing for white?
Two white parents. Four white grandparents.
White as far as you know. Lots of folks were passing and took that secret to the grave.
My husband jokes and says that when he saw me at work, he thought I was a black girl until I turned around. That happened a lot. Still does, especially if I had my hair in French braids and had been to the beach and had been out in the sun for a long time. I can get a real nice tan. My nickname at work was Apple Booty. I used to play beach volleyball. Loved it. Working out in the sand makes your core strong and booty tight. Black girl at my job gave me that nickname.
The nickname fits.
I'm not racist. I have black friends. And Dickie Bird can't be racist. He has slept with black women. You can't kick it with or sleep with black people and be racist.
Hearts can be racist. The message never makes itself to the dick.
For a burglar, you sure love to insult people.
I'm not a burglar. Nothing has been stolen.
You talk more than I do, but go ahead.
PYT, my point is, you and I have more in common than we both realize. The way I see it, we live underneath a global power structure that has an imbalance and creates perpetual injustice and daily stress for anyone who is not white, male, Christian, and heterosexual.
In English, please.
Colonialists have power on a global level. They are perpetual liars. Ask the Native Americans. Again, I do not have to cite numerous cases and offenses on the continent of Africa. She paused, like she had to comprehend what was said, then nodded as if it suddenly made sense to her. Then nodded again and asked,
"So, what's the solution, as you see it?"
"For whom?"
"Africa. Black people."
"We have to earn the respect of the rest of the world."
"How does that happen? You seem to be the smart one at the table. How?"
"Colonialists respect nothing, not as a collective. United, they are the locusts of the world."
"I don't know what that means, but it sounds horrible."
"The U.S. and Britain both controlled by fear. The Middle East used to be stunning, but look at it now. Locusts. What they have done to India, Parliament should all be lined up and shot. The European has imposed his values and bombed all that he couldn't control. Colonialists have to control or destroy that which they fear, or the colonialists know the chickens will come home to roost."
"Well, I pray for peace."
"Praying fixes nothing."
"Blasphemy,"
Jake Ellis said. "Until America's blacks, British blacks, Africans, East Indians, and the West Indians organize, until we can drop bombs at will and do it without apology, until we do like the colonizers, those men who look in the mirrors and think they see angels, until we create our own manifest destiny and are willing to fight and kill and ruin the world to have it, we will stay at the bottom. We could organize, run them all out of Africa, and make them pay for all they stole." Mrs. Garrett was rattled.
"That sounds crazy. What you said is insanity."
"And African slavery wasn't insanity?"
"You're talking about killing people based on the color of their skin."
"What a concept. Google lynching in America and see who's the strange fruit."
"Don't talk to me like I'm an idiot.
I'm only flipping what colonialists have done, using their playbook, their rules."
"I don't believe in all that killing. I'm a Christian. We don't kill people."
"You must have a version of the Bible in which Jesus dies of old age."
"We don't talk that way. We don't go around killing people."
"What were the Christian crusades, if not a murdering spree?" She was flustered.
"You make me feel stupid. I don't like feeling stupid." "That is not my intent.
I enjoy spirited conversations with beautiful women." Mrs. Garrett fell silent, looked at her nails, bounced her leg. Mr. Garrett said,
"Woman, don't call me that, Dickie Bird."
He said it harder. "Woman." She gritted her teeth.
"I'm fine. This woman is fine."
Jake Ellis said. This sort of non-Kardashian conversation too heavy for you?
I'm not your enemy. I don't owe anyone any money. I know nothing about drugs.
Relax. This is only a conversation. I'm only offering you an intellectual conversation.
Well, I'm not intellectual. I'm a pacifist. And yes, I watch the Kardashians.
Jake motioned at the art. You benefit from all my enemy has stolen from Africa.
Why do you keep talking to me? You are here for Dicky Bird, not me.
I'm putting you on the auction block, evaluating your worthiness.
What does that mean?
You're the only trophy in the house that can talk.
I'm not a trophy.
Winning you represents success. Educated or not, intellectual or not, talented or not, you are the ultimate American trophy. Society says you're worth more than a black man or woman.
More bullshit.
Each time I meet a woman I like, I try to understand why she is worth her weight in gold.
I'm just a girl from Compton who has moved 20 miles away to Pasadena.
But in America, are the smartest, better-educated black women worth as much as you?
What do you mean?
A pretty woman like you was recorded at a hotel. People lawsuit. They awarded her $55 million. Black man was killed by a cop in front of his girlfriend and child, killed while complying with the colonialists' commands, and his family was given only $3 million. $3 million will make you rich for a few years, but $55 million makes you wealthy. The white woman was not dead. A white woman being insulted was worth more than a young black man's life.
I'm being attacked based on the color of my skin.
Imagine how Michelle Obama has felt for 8 years and counting.
I happen to be born what they call white, same as I happen to be born a woman. I have no control over any benefits or detriments that came with my pre-existing conditions.
See? You do know a few $10 words. Head lowered, eyes wild, she frowned at him.
I don't like people laughing at me.
Then laugh with me.
Shit ain't funny. Not a goddamn thing.
Now I hear the Compton inside you.
Whatever.
You seem to have a good soul. But a woman with your pre-existing conditions still has the power to point and lie about a black man and have a mob of Garretts come running with a rope. Woman like you told a lie, and a city in Oklahoma ended up burned to the ground.
You're a bigot. But you're not the first bigot I've met. Can't say this conversation is new either. I've been tiptoeing around racism all my life. Living in 90220 wasn't like being in Malibu.
Really?
Wasn't easy being white and almost everybody else was black or Mexican.
Bet the brown and black OJs were all over you. She paused, then surprised me. She chuckled. Look at that smile.
Don't lie.
I bet you have a few jungle fever stories to tell.
I was a mud duck to the bone.
Body like a black woman and the advantages of being white? Mrs. Garrett smiled. Jake Ellis, the intellectual enforcer with the golden tongue. Garrett stared, nodded. Quiet. A quiet man was a calculating man. A quiet man who smiled like a monkey baring its teeth was a dangerous man. Monkeys smiled that way when they wanted to kill their prey. A timer went off, and everybody jumped. Jake Ellis said, "The food is done." Mrs. Garrett said,
"Smells real good. Smells like we're in a 5-star restaurant."
"Well, pretty woman, I hope you are hungry."
"I'm starving."
Mr. Garrett said,
"Woman, don't touch the food. It could be poisoned."
"Dicky Bird, let's not be mean."
Jake Ellis said, "Be ready for the best meal you've ever had."
"You cooked?"
"I went to culinary school in Ghana before I went back for another degree in Nigeria." She paused, shocked, surprised.
"Oh, Jesus. They have a school in Africa for that?"
Jake Ellis looked confused, then understood the mix-up. "Culinary means cooking."
"Oh, I thought it was that other funny word that means..." "Jesus, never mind."
"I have to ask." Jake Ellis laughed. "Were you thinking of the word cunnilingus?"
"I am so embarrassed."
She laughed, turned red.
I went to junior college one semester. Then I met Dickie Bird and everything changed. You went to a real university and learned all sorts of things. No wonder you talk that way. You're the king of big words. You're smart.
People are surprised when a black man is intelligent. Shocked when a white man is not. Mrs. Garrett smiled like the woman Jake had just kissed outside of TGI Fridays.
Chapter 6. The energy between Jake Ellis and Mrs. Garrett had changed. Mr. Garrett growled, frowned at me, saw I was just along for the ride. His wife moved 2 inches closer to Jake Ellis, continued chatting. I placed a meal in front of everyone, the food hot from the oven and stove. Mrs. Garrett told Jake Ellis,
"Maybe God placed you in my life at this moment."
"For what purpose did your negligent God send me to be in your presence?" She shook her head.
"Outside of talking about killing everybody because you want to show them that you can be as evil as they can be, you have my mind on the awful prenup."
"Break it down. Tell me about your prenup."
Mr. Garrett spoke up.
"Don't, woman. Don't.
It's not their business."
She stared at her husband. Nostrils flared. She considered, then turned to Jake Ellis.
"If he divorces this woman, I get $20,000 for each full year of marriage."
"For each full year?"
"No prorating." I didn't understand prorating at the time. I never used big words. I mean, pro usually means good, positive things, but in this case, pro was like being conned.
"Just $20,000 a year? That's below the poverty line."
"Poverty line is at $12,000, somewhere around that much. I have relatives so poor that $2,000 a month to them would be like winning the California state lottery."
"Well, that's not much better than poverty in California. You know, $20,000 a year is like $8,000 in Mississippi or Arkansas. If you divorce, you'll still need at least a part-time job."
Mr. Garrett said,
"That's enough, Elaine. Time to shut your trap."
Jake Ellis said,
"Shut the fuck up before I become a nigger and shut you the fuck up."
Mrs. Garrett shivered and her eyes watered. Then she shook her head. Jake Ellis asked,
"Who was your lawyer? He needs his ass slapped until he's disbarred."
She sniffled.
"Well, the lawyer is a woman."
"She needs to be slapped twice for not looking out for your best interests."
She looked at her husband.
"I used his lawyer."
Jake Ellis chuckled.
"Using his attorney?
That was smart." She shot her eyes back to Jake Ellis, nostrils flaring.
"I know he railroaded me."
Mr. Garrett reached for his woman's hand.
"This is done. Don't upset my wife."
She snatched her hand away.
"My whole life, I've been getting screwed over."
Jake Ellis asked,
"Why you use his lawyer? That was his army. That was the enemy."
"She seemed nice. Until the two-faced bitch brought the papers when we were about to get married. I was in my wedding dress, and his lawyer marched in. Everyone was already at the church, and it was almost time for me to walk out. So I felt like I didn't have much of a choice."
"He fucked you over. You're in your prime. These are your best years."
"I'm almost 34, with no kids. My prime is in my rear view."
"These are still your baby-making years, if you want a baby."
"Almost last call,"
she sniffled.
"So, how much do you think I should get?"
"I'd say he should pay you at least $1 million for each year."
"That's a lot."
"Look at your yacht. I bet he pays at least $100,000 a year to keep it nice."
"Yeah."
"You're sleeping in his bed, and you don't think you should get more than the gardener?"
"He'd never agree to that much. Not for me."
"I bet that snowflake can afford it. He pulled a fast one." Mr. Garrett sat calm, jaw tight, left hand opening and closing.
Mrs. Garrett returned her attention and aggravated body language to Jake Ellis. Said,
"Well, Dickie Bird said the money part was not important because we'd be together forever."
"If it wasn't important, then he should have said you could have it all if he ever filed."
"Well, I didn't think about that either. There was a lot of fast talk, double talk that made no sense, and again, I was in my expensive wedding dress, and people were waiting for me to appear, and the contract had big words, complicated phrases, and I felt stupid trying to stand there in front of people and pretend I understood what it all meant, so I just signed the bullshit.
He got you to sign, and now you're trapped because he's holding all the cards. You know it's true. I bet you're scared to say something or do something because you're afraid you'll lose this lifestyle. You're just another piece of furniture. Get old, start to look outdated. Next thing you know, a Salvation Army truck will pull up and drag you away like you're a tax write-off.
Her eyes watered. Her bottom lip quivered. She struggled to keep it together. Mr. Garrett commanded,
"Don't listen to this troublemaker. He knows nothing about us."
Mrs. Garrett wiped her eyes, voice shaking.
"Why did I have to sign the prenuptial?"
Mr. Garrett cleared his throat.
"It was standard. Everyone has one."
"Did you have to put that in my damn face while I was in my wedding dress?"
"It had slipped my mind, and my attorney brought it to my attention at the wedding."
"But it couldn't have slipped your mind for 4 more hours?"
"I had forgotten. How many times do I have to say that? I had forgotten."
"Really? But you remembered it right before we married? That has haunted me ever since that day. I ain't said nothing about it, but it haunted me. I felt like a fool standing in front of your attorney, and the bitch had papers for me to sign, and said if I didn't sign them right then and there, there would be no damn wedding. I was in my wedding dress. I had my makeup on, so I couldn't even cry. A woman can't cry after she puts her makeup on. The lawyer wouldn't let me leave the room. She told me that if I left, the wedding was off, so I had less than a minute to decide. My mama was right there next to me. So were my sisters. I felt like a goddamn fool. We were in church. It happened to me in church, under God's eye. I didn't want to sleep with your lying ass that night, but I had to, because it was my wedding night. That's why I was crying when I walked down the aisle. God had abandoned me. That's why it was so hard for me to say my vows. I'd been railroaded in church. I wasn't crying because I was happy. I lied. It was the saddest day of my life. To make it worse, the sex wasn't that damn good. I know I was almost a virgin, didn't have experience, but I know what feels good. First time we had sex, it was horrible."
"We're past that."
"You're past that, so we're past it, right? Is that how everything works?"
Garrett told her,
"Your life is much better than it was when I met you. You were a waitress at Coco's in Compton. In Compton! Do you think you would have managed this on your own?"
She snapped,
"I'm 34 goddamn years old, and I don't have not one goddamn baby. You know what the age 35 is? When a woman is getting too old to have a baby. At my last appointment, my doctor told me I needed to consider freezing my eggs. That made me cry. Even if I have a baby now, I'll be old, and the kid will be young. I'm technically, literally, some word, old enough to be a grandmother. I didn't want to be an old woman with a newborn baby. You've had me here in this mansion, a castle built to have a big family, and
"Freeze your damn eggs. Don't make it an issue. We can always hire a surrogate. I don't need a stranger having my baby for me. That's ludicrous. If she carries the baby, then it's her fucking baby, not mine. I want my own goddamn baby. Labor, stretch marks, and all."
Mr. Garrett slapped his hands down on the table with enough force to make the food dance. She recoiled.
I jumped too. Was about to jump up and throw a few blows.
Garrett huffed and puffed. Jake Ellis was amused.
So was I. At Jake Ellis's skills. He was a master instigator. He could make your left hand get into a death match with your right hand just to entertain himself.
Jake Ellis pressed on.
"How much does he give you?"
"Come on, it's just us talking." Her voice trembled.
"He gives me almost $2,000 allowance a month."
"About $500 a week. Month with 5 Fridays, you're getting shortchanged by $500.
$24,000 a year gives you as much as you'll get in a prenup." She sniffled.
"And I have to buy toilet paper and whatever with my damn money."
Jake Ellis chuckled.
"So you're using your money to buy tissue so he can clean his eyes?"
She looked down, anger rising.
"Wish you had been there on my wedding day."
"His lawyer gave you an ultimatum, and that ultimatum was on his behalf.
Bitch walked in and bam, papers thrown in my face like she was making it rain at a strip club. 10 damn pages of shit in legal talk, with big words and double talk. Bam, in my face."
"Right before you married. But you know that was on his behalf.
An attorney ain't just going to show up at a wedding and find you at the last moment, not without his direction.
On the day that was supposed to be the most special day in my life,
I was livid.
How did that make you feel, as a human being?
No one has ever asked me that. About anything.
I'm asking. Men like Garrett dehumanize every non-white man and every woman. I care.
Everyone who said I was ugly and dumb and I'd never amount to anything was there. People who thought I'd never marry were there. I didn't want to be embarrassed.
But you were humiliated.
She glowered at her husband. He had no empathy for her plight. It was business. She stabbed a fork into her salmon, stabbed it like she imagined she was stabbing her husband. He said, "Don't eat that food." She said,
"I hope it is poisoned. I hope to God it's marinated in garlic and cyanide."
"Don't eat it."
She took an angry bite. Then her eyes lit up. She inhaled. Then her eyelids fluttered as she exhaled.
"Ah."
Mr. Garrett jumped up.
"You piece of shit. You poisoned my wife."
She died 1,000 times. Each time. A little death.
Chapter 7. Mrs. Garrett closed her eyes.
"Oh, my God. Help me, Jesus. Help me, Jesus."
She stomped her feet 3 times, like she was summoning the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Then she opened her eyes. Mr. Garrett touched her, but she moved his hand away. She licked her lips, took another big bite.
"This salmon is orgasmic. This is really good."
I sat back down. Mentally, I had floated in and out of their conversation, but my mind was here now. No longer on Margot and Jimmy Lee. My angst no longer on Rachel Redman. Mr. Garrett's lips turned down. He was disappointed we hadn't killed his wife. The Bostonian from Princeton said,
"So the food is not poisoned?"
Starving like Marvin, I took a bite out of my salmon, then took another and another. His wife said,
"If you don't eat your piece of salmon, Dickie Bird, I sure will. It's delish."
Then Jake Ellis took a small bite of his, washed it down with sparkling water. I ate. Jake Ellis ate. Mrs. Garrett ate the fastest. Garrett scowled, lips moving, no words leaving his aggravated face. His wife had another religious moment.
"Dickie Bird, it's so good. It's better than sex."
Jake Ellis said,
"That depends on who you're having sex with."
Mrs. Garrett laughed, her breasts bouncing, as happy as they'd ever been. Jake Ellis laughed along with her.
"See, PYT, you do know how to smile."
Mrs. Garrett took another fast bite.
"My salmon never comes out this good."
"Not everybody's good with seasoning. This is what I call my magically moist salmon."
Like a record on repeat, Mr. Garrett barked, "Stop talking to her!" Jake Ellis stood up, picked up the magically moist salmon on his plate, and slapped the Boston gangster with Princeton credentials across the face. Jake Ellis did the African finger snaps, went and got another piece of salmon, then sat back down, put a napkin across his lap, picked up his knife and fork, cut a small piece of fish, then eased it into his mouth. The wife stared at her husband, salmon slithering across his face. She slapped her leg and laughed at her husband.
"Dickie Bird, you look so silly, like a cartoon. You look real stupid right now. You look the way I felt when your bitch of an attorney came in and, bam, hit me with that prenuptial agreement."
Jake Ellis complimented Mrs. Garrett. "This is a real nice spread you have here." She blinked.
"Thank you, friend. It used to be owned by some silent film star, then by some action movie star, then by some rapper, then by some big-time director, now by us."
"Never seen this much art in one place, except the British Museum. They stole art, statues, and sculptures from Africa. If they gave back all they stole, museum would be empty."
"You are so political. Do you ever turn it off and have a normal conversation?"
"For me, this is normal. I analyze what I see in the world, my place in the world,
Even if you are not political, even if you choose to remain naive, everything around you remains political.
I just live here.
Art shows up in boxes and I put it up on an empty wall. Jake Ellis whistled.
You hired a professional decorator to hook up your joint like this?
Did it myself, and saved us a lot of money.
The whole house?
All 12,000 square feet. I think we have 12,000 square feet. I forget.
I bet you $10 you've never lifted a finger to do labor.
Architecture was my favorite subject at Compton High. Love it. That and interior decorating. I drew the initial layout for the pool, gym, and the basketball/tennis/volleyball court, too. I don't swim, but Dickie Bird does, so I designed a pool for him. Well, the shape of the pool. I have no problem knocking down walls and putting down tile. It's relaxing. I knocked down two walls and opened up the space in here. Did it and helped the workers carry all the trash out. I'm a blue-collar Compton girl. I came out of the womb working hard, white skin and all. White didn't mean we had it made. I went 3 days with no food once, and I used to look forward to school because I knew I'd get to eat lunch. We had it rough. Not all of us get to sit in an ivory tower from birth. And also, for the record, something is always broken when you have a house, especially one this size. A toilet seat needs to be replaced, or the commode he uses needs to be retightened, and I always try and fix it myself before I call the First American Home Warranty people to send someone out. Most things can be fixed in 20 minutes.
Handy woman, if you are ever in West Africa, come and make my home look this nice.
It's just a hobby. I like to make things prettier and spaces more functional.
With the rich folks you know, your hobby could make a lot more than 20 G a year.
Never thought about that. I guess I could do that for others, and get paid, and stay busy. Again, not like I have kids. We have room for at least 5 kids, and those rooms stay empty.
How many bedrooms does a palace like this have?
9. 12, if you count the 2 extra offices. His and mine are on separate floors.
9 and 2 are 11. You said 12. The other bedroom? She laughed.
It was converted into my private closet. Fucking cool, huh?
Are you serious?
He laughed.
So your closet is so big, it could have its own bathroom.
It does. I have a king-size bedroom that I use as a walk-in closet. It is a beautiful Murphy bed and a television. I can sleep or nap in there. I have a keypad, and the only way it opens is if it recognizes my fingerprints. I have to protect my shoes. The money he gives me, I buy 2 pairs of shoes a month. It's like retail therapy. I lock them up because relatives steal. His relatives, not mine. He bought me 60 pairs of shoes after we married. He used to buy me things all the time. Most of it before we married. Now, I buy my own stuff. I have close to 400 pair.
You should give me a tour,
Mr. Garrett told his wife.
You won't show that, miscreant, a damn thing.
Mrs. Garrett jerked, slowly turned her head, and scowled at her husband like she had forgotten he existed in the universe, like he had walked in on her, giving Jake Ellis fellatio. Jake Ellis stood up from the table, hands in fists. Mr. Garrett slapped his hands down.
There will be no tour.
Mrs. Garrett slammed her own hands down on the table.
Will you tear up that prenup?
Her voice carried, echoed from wall to wall. Jake Ellis smiled. I did the opposite. Mr. Garrett commanded his wife,
You will not take him upstairs.
She snapped.
Yes or no? Will you call your attorney now and have the prenup revoked?
Woman.
Dickie Bird.
He sucked his teeth.
Let's let them leave. Then you and I can talk business in private. What you did was cold-blooded, and it wasn't done in private. You did it in front of my goddamn mother, asshole. You didn't give me time to think on it. Not one damn second. It was an ultimatum, and this is my goddamn ultimatum. Make that call, or I take my friend upstairs.
He said,
I can't do that. Not now. Not before we talk.
Then I guess there will be a tour.
Jake Ellis slid Mrs. Garrett's chair out like a gentleman. She rose, smoothed out her clothing, then stood like a lady, bowed her head a bit.
She thanked Jake Ellis with the softest smile. He nodded and reciprocated the grin. It was so formal, I thought they were about to bow and curtsy. I expected parlor music to come on, and then they would dance up the walls like Fred and Ginger. Jake Ellis followed her out of the dining area. She pointed out art on the walls.
So, you're actually from Africa?
Ghana. But I spend a lot of time in Nigeria.
I have friends who go to Africa for vacation. They go once or twice a year.
Couples?
Just women. Neighbors. They're older and never invite me.
Maybe because they go there to have sex with African men. Rich women love to go to Africa to have sex with African men because they want sexual satisfaction like never before.
Is that what they're doing?
They want a generous lover with substantial offerings. She laughed.
Substantial offerings. Can't say I've ever had that before.
So, tell me about all of this art. Some is African. Some is definitely stolen. They took to the wide and circular staircase, chatted like buddies moving through a museum. Last view I had of him, Jake Ellis was shoulder to shoulder with Mrs. Garrett. I think they were holding hands. Then I couldn't hear her talking anymore. Mr. Garrett sat in rage. His wife had defied him. An African had insulted him. I handed him a napkin. Salmon, a chunk is slithering down the side of your face. He yanked the napkin from my hand, wiped the intense anger from his reddening eyes. I said, eat your dinner. I might get another piece of that salmon.
You don't fucking tell me what to do. Not in my own house.
Jimmy Lee was on my mind again. Then Rachel Redman. Then Margot. Out of habit, I checked my pocket for my personal phone and remembered I didn't have it with me. On the charger, at home. Felt anxious. Still couldn't remember what else I was supposed to do today. I just knew Margot had brought me the name of a dead man and threatened to tell what she knew. If it had been anyone else, they'd have ended up at the closest alligator farm. Margot was my daughter. She had me in check. Maybe even in checkmate. I spoke out loud. I need to get up on $50,000. Mr. Garrett thought I was talking to him.
Is this some sort of a shakedown?
Nah. Someone is having issues and came to me. It's shaking me down. But right now my pockets are like rabbit ears. They are shaking me down thinking I'm living large like you.
And you expect me to pay an extra 50 to alleviate your plight?
Nah, man. Just thinking out loud. I glanced at the expensive art. Wondered how much it was worth on the black market. The devil is dancing in my empty pockets, and I'm talking out loud. Garrett had the monkey grin again.
He better not put a finger on her.
I'd worry about another preposition.
You think everything is a joke?
No man can control what a woman does. You might as well try and catch a river with your bare hands. I was married.
Was.
My wife touched as many men as she wanted.
You should have killed your wife.
Thought about that more times than I can count. Loved her too much.
She was a whore.
Don't you call my ex-wife a whore? She was a whore.
All women are whores. You know that, and I know that.
I never called her out of her name. You won't either.
But you don't get pissed when I said you should have killed her.
Chris Rock said that if you haven't contemplated murder, you ain't been in love.
If not a whore, what did you call her?
I called her my wife. Then I called her my ex-wife. Eventually, I stopped calling her. Mr. Garrett evaluated me.
You have a better-than-average education for a black man.
Backhanded compliments make my day.
Come work for me.
And do what? Build a house? Or pass out prenups?
I need some muscle. New muscle. Last crew I had, I sent them packing. You caught me in between guards, you could say.
San Bernardino knows. That's why we came today.
That explains a lot. A former guard probably snitched. That's the only way you would know where all of my guns were. Same for the code to the gate and to my house.
Most men have a price.
San Bernardino is a thorn in my side. I usually have men at my side. But I've gotten relaxed.
How relaxed can a man be if he lives with a loaded gun in almost every room?
All are legal. All are registered. Most guys who stockpile have a legal stash.
I've had situations before. Not unlike this. And well, again, a man with money is always a target. San Bernardino isn't my only problem. That's why I need strong men. Smart men, like you.
Would be a conflict of interest at this point. First thing you want me to do would be go upstairs and handle my co-worker. Then you give me a gun and send me after San Bernardino. I'll give you a modified AR-15.
Of course. What was I thinking? I'll start you at $150,000. Think of it as a signing bonus.
$150,000 to sign? And then what?
A salary. Mid-six figures. You get a paycheck every 2 weeks. You get medical and dental. It would be legit, so far as the money goes. Would come with a title and a permit to carry.
You are making a tempting offer.
Cash to sign. We can negotiate the rest. Just shake my hand. Gentleman's agreement.
You're serious.
Has a motherfucking heart attack.
I sat back and looked at his extended hand. I was one handshake away from big money. Margot could get her 50. I could get a house. That was a life-changing amount of money. I thought about it, considered that capitalistic offer for as long as a commercial break on the love connection, then shook my head, but felt like a fool for turning down that offer. Mr. Garrett said,
"You're level-headed, not simple. Saying nigger didn't rattle you."
"Don't call me a nigger."
"I'm just saying, you hear the word nigger and don't lose it."
"Now would be a good time for you to stop talking."
"In Nazi Germany, the few colors that were there, they were easy to identify and didn't have to wear a yellow star. And they were of no consequence. You know why? Hitler could take blacks away, and no one would care. The Jews, they had to be marked. The gays had to wear pink triangles. Can't just look at a man and tell that he's gay. Or Jewish. Blacks, your skin marks you. Your skin is your triangle. Germany never had a Negro problem, not like here in America. They kept black Germans in their place. The black German men knew better. They would never touch or say a word to a European woman. They would have been sterilized. They would have been charged with racial defilement. They knew not to get close to white women. There was a price.
What's your point?
Lessons have to be learned.
San Bernardino has the same philosophy.
Some people still don't know their places.
Some people.
San Bernardino knows me. This was done to piss me off.
Like my buddy said, I guess your people are used to doing the invading.
This has nothing to do with skin. You broke into my home. If I had walked in and saw two albino midgets, I would have asked why the fuck two albino midgets were in my goddamn house.
Quit while you're ahead.
A lesson will be learned. And know this. I will always be ahead of men like you.
Men like me?
Men of a lesser god.
He said that like he was in control, like he was as powerful as Ozymandias from The Watchmen. He picked up his fork, stabbed his salmon, ate slowly, nodded, waited impatiently. He said,
"And you say you and your friend have stolen my guns?"
"No one said we stole anything."
"You have my guns?"
"You could say that."
"A disgruntled employee told San Bernardino inside information."
"One can assume."
"Smart move."
"Question."
"What?"
"Why would one man need 27 guns?
"In case he runs into a pack of niggers, and they have 26.
Chapter 8
Jake Ellis and Mrs. Garrett appeared at the top of the dramatic staircase. Jake Ellis was pontificating. "Accra is amazing. On Valentine's Day, everyone wears red."
"So Ghana and Nigeria are different places?"
"Nigerians think they are the best, but they are stolen from Ghana."
"Can Africans steal from Africans?"
"We are different nations. Right now, there is literally a music war going on."
Mrs. Garrett said,
"And that music you said I should listen to? Tell me the names again."
"I love Asa. Best thing out of Nigeria. Sarkodie is the king of Afrobeats in Ghana. Nivikenzo, Alikiba, Diamond Platinums, Yemi Alade, Tiwa Savage. I could name at least 50 more artists."
"Do most of the men look like you?"
"Not to me."
"I mean, do the people have nice skin like yours?"
He laughed. "There is no one type of African, just like there is no one type of African-American.
You'll walk and see an albino or a light-skinned African and run across many Africans who can pass for white or are of European descent. There are pale Africans. You'll see people who remind you of your